From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made in a small village in Arkansas in 1936 when a little girl who didn't speak visited a library. The girl was 8 years old and she was a victim of sexual abuse. One day, the girl's neighbor took her to the local school library. It was small and it was segregated. The books were old and often had no backs because they were left over from the nearby white school. But that didn't matter to the girl. Reading provided escape, and she felt safe in the library. Over the years, she read every single book in that building, there were about 300, and was inspired not only to read more, but to write. That little girl was legendary poet, author, and playwright Dr. Maya Angelou, and she said the library saved her life. Now, when you hear the word library, your first thought may be of books, but 21st century libraries are transforming into technology centers, learning labs, and community gathering places where building engagement with patrons is a priority. They provide resources like computers and internet access for people living in poverty. They help refugees learn English. They offer children and senior citizens expanding opportunities to learn. Our focus this hour is on public libraries and their vision for the future despite the challenges they face. How can libraries continue to provide valuable community services when securing funding is often a struggle? And how are libraries evolving to meet the changing needs of our patrons, especially in today's technology-rich society? So lots on the agenda for this hour. And I'm very pleased to have a packed studio. My guests for the hour will share their perspectives and talk about their library's visions. Judy Shuey is the music and media librarian at the Central Library of Rochester. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Sally Snow is the assistant director of the Monroe County Library System. Welcome, Sally.
Thanks, Megan.
Greg Benoit is the director of the Gates Public Library. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And Kim Whittemore is the children's librarian at the Schlott Branch Library. Thanks, Kim.
Nice to be here.
Listeners, you can join the conversation by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org, or you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. Now, this discussion is especially timely for the Central Library because you have an event coming up that was sort of the inspiration for this discussion. Judy, why don't you kick things off for us and explain what's happening in January?
Sure. In January, we're going to be having a program called NPR's Generation Listen, and it's a national program that engages not just the listeners on the radio, but also the public. When they come into the library, they're going to be greeted by Evan Dawson and Mona Segetola-Slami. And the program is actually going to be featuring a podcast known as Hidden Brain. And the topic will be about politics. The name of the podcast is When It Comes to Politics, Family Matters. And so we'll listen to the podcast and then Evan and Mona will be the moderators of a discussion following that podcast.
We have more in common than we think. That's the overarching theme, I think. And it's especially right. Timely. Even after the holidays, we may still be gathering with family and having some difficult conversations if we don't agree with them. And I know Mona and Evan are very excited to be part of this. So I'm sure they're happy to partner. But this also ties into expanding hours at the Central Library. And that's something that I hear from people in the community all the time. I love the library, but I work 8 to 5, I work 8 to 6, and I can't get there because it closes early. So the Central Library is staying open a little later in January. Tell us, Sally and Judy, a little bit about that.
Well, I can speak to that. We are just today's perfect timing to be on the air because we're sending out the press release and doing all the publicity for our new expanded hours. In the last few years, the library has been struggling financially, but last year Monroe County gave us an extra $150,000 to enable us to open a couple later nights a week. We need to do that to meet minimum standards for central libraries across the state, which is 55 hours, and we were only open for 51. So now we'll be open Monday and Wednesday nights till 8:30. For our patrons. So we're hoping that people will come down and get books. It'll be more convenient hours for people. We can have more evening programming.
Mm-hmm. And currently the library closes at 6. I believe.
Mm-hmm. On one.
Okay.
Correct.
So you're hoping to do more events like the Generation Listen.
Yes.
To bring more people in and make them more engaged. And I'll turn now to Kim and Greg. Is there anything going on in Gates or in the Schlott Library where you're hoping to to bring more engagement into the library? Maybe you don't have later hours, but what are some of the programming decisions that you're making?
Well, at the Gates Library, we've got a 5-year strategic plan that we're currently halfway through, and a main focus of that has been community programming. We have increased pretty significantly the number of programs that we have at the library. And when I say programs, you probably are thinking of story times and book discussion groups, and we certainly have those. But we also have some things that maybe you wouldn't normally think of, like cooking classes, jewelry making classes, a variety of craft classes for people of all ages. So we, in general, we try to drive as much support as we can from our collection. So people checking out craft books, people checking out cookbooks, and try to turn those into social opportunities too. So every month we have, approximately 60 to 70 programs going on in the library, which is more than one a day, sometimes two or three or four a day. And they encompass a wide variety of topics.
Mm-hmm. Kim?
We've got a lot going on at Charlotte. Our adult services librarian has been planning a lot of extra things that invite people in to see, whether it's presentations on history or craft opportunities. She does basic computer classes. And in the children's room, because we're limited to 7 o'clock, we do close 7 o'clock weeknights, we have made some programs at 6 o'clock. So it's been fun to have our science nights, our tail wagon tutors, a chance to come up and read to a therapy dog, and stuff like the Amherst Moose coming out on January 26th. We're really looking forward to that visit.
And I think all of these ideas tie into that perception of library as place. So when you're petitioning for funding, when you're down in Albany, and I know that happened, was it last week? Was the hearing last week? Okay.
Yeah, they did the testimony last week.
Okay, so when you're down there and you're asking for more funding, because this is a topic that comes up every year, I believe last year, before that testimony, the funding was remaining stagnant. And then after the testimony, they granted more funding. Is this a battle every year? Are you always trying to prove how valuable libraries are, that they're more than just books, you need more help, they're big education spaces? Let's talk about some of those challenges.
Well, for me, Megan, in the library when I first started, programming was not as prevalent as it is today as far as the central library goes. Parking is always an issue downtown. We've been trying to promote our programming and enabling people to come down and park. But the programs have really ramped up in the last couple of years. So we provide programming during the evenings now that we're going to be having expanded hours, but also on Saturdays all day. For all types of groups, we have local history, genealogy. Also, we show free movies, crafts. The list is endless. Live music goes on all year. So programming is a really important part of our agenda at the library. And of course, that takes a lot of funding.
Mm-hmm. And the way we work toward that funding and additional hours toward the library is all about advocacy. As you said, they had the testimony before the state senate this last week, and every year we take a crew down to Albany of dedicated librarians, library lovers, not just from Monroe County. Every county, every library system in the state of New York sends a group down to Albany to talk to all our legislators about libraries, to get the value of libraries through to them. And we do it on the local level, too. We annually visit all our local offices. A lot of times we bring the legislators out to the libraries, both school and public, to see what we do, to kind of demonstrate the value to them. And they get it. I mean, they are getting it. We have had raises in state funding for the past couple years. But we're still not at the state education levels by state education law. So, we just keep pushing.
Being in the town, so one of the things that's critical about the state funding is that, our building is financed, the staff is paid by the town of Gates, but money that comes from the state helps our library network with the other libraries in the county. So it really turns the county library system into a cost-saving mechanism where we can make group purchases and work collaboratively with one another So every dollar that the state spends on county library systems saves each of the smaller municipalities considerably more.
Mm-hmm. So how are libraries within this community sharing, well, are they sharing collections and resources to try to prove that this funding can be used in multiple ways? Are there any examples of that?
Oh, yeah. We have the Overdrive ebook and audiobook collection. That is a shared resource. The system pays out of that state money. We pay a platform fee to have the ebook collection. And then each library in the system helps buy content for it, all the ebooks and audiobooks. And that is shared throughout the county. Anybody with a Monroe County Library card can hop on Overdrive and check out an ebook.
And that's true for all of the hardcover material as well. We can share materials by having placing a hold request and having items delivered to the nearest branch.
I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. I have a bit of an advantage. My mom works at the Grace Public Library, so she can get things for me pretty quickly. So this year, what are you hoping for from the state? I think last year's budget, the final approved budget, was $95.6 million. And state aid for library and library systems. It was about a 4.3% increase from the previous year. What are you hoping for this year?
Well, we're always hoping to be funded equal with what's on education law. You know, we have talking points every year. Those haven't come out yet, but we're still pushing to be, equal funding for education law.
I think last year there was a 4.5% gap between the education funding and the library funding. Do you think that legislators have a basic misunderstanding of libraries as an educational tool?
I think that we've been doing a lot of outreach to help bridge that gap. State Senator Robach is very involved with our library in Gates and in the libraries in the different constituencies that he represents. And I think we've done a good job reaching out to politicians so that they're aware that it's not just books on a shelf in a quiet room, that it's a place for experiential learning, it's a place for community to come together. The challenge that we sometimes face is reaching populations that don't already use the library, and they may have a kind of a quaint, antiquated idea of what a library is. So getting those people up to speed is the challenge usually.
So what are some of the things you would say to those people? What are new opportunities and resources that libraries can offer them that they may not know about?
Yeah. So I think a good example of that is probably one of the business resources that we have. It's called A to Z databases. And using this particular product, you can look up any business in the country. You can pull lists of businesses based on their revenue, based on number of employees, based on their standard industry code. You can also use this same database to find information on residents. So if you own a small business and you want to do some direct mailers to everybody on a particular street in Henrietta, you can put that street in, get all the mailing addresses that you need. I've used this to reach out to the Chamber of Commerce in Gates, the Gates Chalet Chamber of Commerce, and it's been very popular with bankers. I think traditionally these people may not think of the library as a resource, but when they're looking for prospective businesses within their own community, it's been very valuable for them, and they're usually stunned at the amount of information I can pull up in, under 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think patrons understand the value of a librarian? It's very easy to get on Google, search for something, hope that it's true. But what would you say to people who may think that librarians just help you find books? There's more to that, correct?
Well, the division that I work in the media division at the Central Library, is probably one of the most popular divisions because we offer DVDs and music CDs, and I don't think people really realize that not everyone has access to digital content. So it is a format that is still alive and well in our library. So it's a very popular place for city patrons to come to get free materials. So it's very important for us to be there.
Mm-hmm. I love interacting with the folks that come through. We get to do programming for the children in the children's room, and not to undersell the importance of finding a good book, making the right connection for somebody who's trying to figure out what book this kid is going to enjoy, and working with them to find that just right read.
Absolutely. And we talked a little bit offline about children's books you may recommend? We had some listeners write in some questions about I'm shopping for books for the holidays. I'm looking especially for kids between 3 and 10. I sent poor Kim maybe 10 questions that were very specific. But Kim, what's most popular right now? Now that we're talking about kids' books, are there any series that you'd recommend in particular?
Well, Rick Riordan continues to be very popular. He's the author of the Percy Jackson and the Olympians series, starting with The Lightning Thief. But he also came out with Heroes of Olympus, The Kane Chronicles, and most recently Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard. So he's exploring not only Greek, but also Egyptian and Norse mythology. A lot of kids are enjoying The Diary of a Wimpy Kid. The Jeff Kinney series is quite popular with the boys, and then the Dork Diary series by Rachel Renee Russell I would hand to some girls that are coming in. Lots of series out there that are popular and continuing to be written. For the younger people, I would make sure that they have at least looked at Magic Treehouse.
Magic
that
Treehouse.
Brings out a wonderful aspect of historic fiction, and kids in quite young are really enjoying it.
Sally's nodding. I've never heard of Magic Treehouse.
Oh, yeah. That's been a perennial favorite for a long time.
Jack and Annie, if anybody ever needs to find them, Jack and Annie are out exploring all kinds of different periods in history.
Okay. And what age group is that particular?
Probably first, second grade.
Oh, okay. What about preschool? So if you have 3 or 4 year olds, any recommendations for that?
Sure.
Group?
The Elephant and Piggy stories. Mo Willems is just a wonderful author, and the Elephant and Piggy, or the Pigeon, if you've heard Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. He gets into lots of other adventures. But beyond those series, I love one that Mo Willems did called Leonardo the Terrible Monster. And Leonardo wants to just scare the tuna salad out of someone, but he's not a very good monster. So it's kind of a fun book to see how that turns out for him.
Great. There's a message here from Chris on Twitter. He says, loving this connections discussion this afternoon, talking about libraries as place, programming, and what's new with Rochester libraries. So a little library love from Chris there. I'm seeing the phone starting to ring. And I want to remind our listeners, you, of course, can join our conversation about libraries. 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. If you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'm also on Twitter at MMacMedia. First on the phones is Bonnie in Rochester. Hi, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. I love the library. I go there quite often. It's the hours issue is really significant, important to keep expanding the hours because, first of all, there's some other libraries around that, have longer hours, and people that need it the most can benefit from the most are actually in the immediate city area. So you don't want to, close off people. The other things I'm going to suggest are all involve money. One is, it would be great if the library could lower the cost of getting materials copied, because it's fairly high. It's one thing to get one thing copied or something, but number of things, and it's convenient because it's all there. So the other would be great if there would be a lower fee for using the Kate Gleason Auditorium, because there are very few places in the city, believe it or not, that you can use that are halfway decent space that are usually not available to people who don't have a lot of money to, have open discussions or just kind of town hallish like discussions. So it would be great if they could have a more scale of fee rather than, and the one they have isn't outrageous, but it's just often not in the reach of many grassroots groups that don't have any money.
Okay,
so
thanks,
those
Bonnie.
Would be a couple things that I would like to. The other thing is, I know they take recommendations for some, to add to documentaries, DVDs, and all that. But I would hope that could be expanded because I think they're, well, I shouldn't say it because I don't know, but I think they may be pretty limited in the amount they can spend. It would be great to expand that as well, because I've asked for some and they don't have them. So,
great. Okay.
Thanks,
Bonnie. Absolutely. I'm going to let our panelists respond. Judy's nodding over there in regards to the documentary question, so let's start with that.
Sure. Well, it's something that we try to do every budget year is to get more money for materials. So it's a good suggestion. I will certainly take that back to the library. We do spend quite a bit of money on our DVDs. We have a huge selection, probably close to 30,000 volumes of DVDs in our collection. So, but we are very good about taking suggestions, and usually if someone asks us to buy something, we will get it for them.
Mm-hmm. What's the turnaround time? If you were to go in and request something the library didn't own in its collection, how long does it take for that item to become available?
Once we order it and we have it processed and cataloged, it could be in our collection within a couple of weeks.
Oh, wow, that's fast. Okay. Kim, Greg, Sally, any responses to Bonnie's questions about pricing?
I'd like to thank Bonnie for her suggestions. A lot of the branches have meeting space that you can get for free. The Kate Gleason Auditorium is larger. It is in great demand. And we do occasionally need to bring in some revenue to the library so we can keep providing all these great things for people. But, you know, sliding fee scale is something that we could take under consideration for that.
Mm-hmm. And I think Bonnie raises a very good point about transportation. So some of these suburban libraries like Gates, I printed out your hours here. Let's see. Yep, you're open until 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. a few nights a week. So suburban libraries are generally open later. But the people who may need libraries most are in the city and may not have access to transportation to get to somewhere like Gates or Greece or Pittsford. So hopefully these expanded hours at the Central Library will help. Do you think there's an opportunity to expand them even more? If these engagement opportunities are successful, will you look into, instead of just Monday and Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday?
We would love to look into that. We would love to be open as many hours as we could. I think what happens is, you know, and this is the forum that I can do this in, is the plea out to the people who use the libraries to talk to, you know, their elected officials and tell them how important libraries are to them and, you know, tell them that they need the extra hours because that's the only way it's going to happen if the people at that grassroots level start, you know, making that need, that desire for more library hours known.
Maybe I could mention that we do have on Saturday, February 4th, it'll be Take Your Child to the Library Day, and it's a chance for you to stop by and help us with advocacy. There are some cards that you can fill out indicating what your priorities are and what messages you'd like to share with the legislators.
Great. Is that at all of your libraries or...?
Gates is also having events for Take Your Child to the Library Day, too. So I can't speak to all the town libraries, but it's mm-hmm. true for us.
Okay, great. And where are you located in Gates?
We're Greg? 902 Elm Grove Road. So if you're taking 531 out toward Brockport, you get off at Elm Grove, go left. We're just in between TSE and the YMCA.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, if you can share where your library is located.
Yeah, straight up Lake Avenue to the corner of Britton Road. It's a two-story brick building, and happily, the whole second floor is for the kids' room, so it's a wonderful place to bring little people.
Mm-hmm. Again, that's the Shalott Branch Library. I used to go there when I was a kid. I love it dearly. Okay, getting back to your phone calls, up next is Justin in Rochester. Hi, Justin.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question regarding, and you have to forgive me if this is touched on already. I just kind of hopped in my truck and kind of in midway segment here. I currently use the Audible app quite frequently, and I did some research and found to look to see for alternatives and came across the Overdrive app. And, you know, so I looked into it and found out that my Monroe County Library card has since expired, and I've since moved to Genesee County. If I renew my library membership for Genesee County, depending upon which county I renew a library membership to, does that open me to a greater catalog with the use of that app? Books.
Justin, do you live in Monroe or Genesee right now?
I currently live in Genesee County.
If you live in Genesee County, I know that the Nioga Library System, which is another library system that's New Orleans, Genesee, and I can't remember the other county. Oh, bad me. Niagara. They have Overdrive too. And I don't know if their catalog is larger than ours, but we always offer an out-of-county card. It's a $25 fee for
right.
people who live outside Monroe County, and that is a lowered fee. It used to be $45, and we just lowered it last year. You can always apply for an out-of-county card through Monroe County Library System and have access to all our Overdrive.
Okay. I will look into that then. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. Up next on the phone, Wayne in Rochester. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for calling. Are you there, Wayne? Wayne is not there. That's okay. I will just read his comment that was sent through. He's a retired college teacher who wanted to comment on the value of the Central Library for college students. So resources there that are not often realized or appreciated. That's actually something we were talking about in our newsroom yesterday. College students who need access to journals and databases. Can you talk a little bit about where those can be found in the Central Library?
Well, depending on the subject matter, we have two buildings in the Central Library. The Rundle Building houses literature and religion and local history. And in the new building, we have, the arts division is now in the Rundle Building. We have science, history, and business in the Bausch & Lomb Building. So depending on what subject you're looking for, any of the reference librarians can help you find materials that you're looking for as far as in print or on a database.
And I'd just like to add, too, at Gates we see a lot of students who maybe live at home and commute into school. We also get a tremendous number of students who are taking online classes. And the public library becomes even more valuable for those students because they don't necessarily have a facility where they can go, speak to a librarian to get help. So we do help a great number of students, use their own school's databases. It's something that we can provide support with. We can also provide a kind of quiet, comfortable place to do some work to get you out of your house and into a kind of new headspace. So we have, roughly 3,000 people a month that are using us for our Wi-Fi alone.
Oh, wow. Okay. And for students, I'd like to mention, if there's any students out there listening, they can get an access card through our Rochester Regional Library Council. So if they go to RIT or U of R and they are not a Monroe County resident, they can apply at our library for an access card, which gives them access to any of the libraries in Monroe County. A lot of times the college libraries don't focus on popular fiction and things like that. So if they want to come down and just get something to read, they can have access that way. And conversely, we can have people who would want to get access to the academic libraries for study, they can apply for that card through the public library and get access to the college libraries, too.
Great. We're about to take our short break, but I want to remind our listeners, we have lots more time for your questions. So if there's anything, any book recommendations you're looking for, any questions from students looking for information about journals, if you have questions about your homework, where to find resources for that, feel free to give us a call. It's 844-295-TALK, and we'll be right back with more Connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Wednesday on the Next Connections, we talk about the recent resurgence of milk banks. I'm talking about milk banks for donor breast milk. Donor milk can be life-saving for babies, especially premature infants. We'll discuss the bank, who pays for the milk, and more. Then in our second hour, how many hearing people in Rochester know the basics for how to interact with the deaf community? We'll cover a number of topics and answer your questions. Talk with you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, filling in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about libraries and what libraries are now in the 21st century. And we're getting so many questions and comments via email and Twitter, and I'd like to jump on Twitter right now and give a little shout out to Patty at the Central Library, who her colleagues here are telling her go home and rest. But Patty's saying, longer hours at the Central Library relies exclusively on more funding for staff to keep the doors open. Full-time exempt staffing at the Central Library was 174 people in 2001, and now it's 94. Can't open without staff. So I'm seeing everyone nod. Has staffing decreased at all at your libraries as well, Kim and Greg?
It has not decreased at ours. We've been very fortunate to add another full-time children's librarian, which has enabled us to offer more children's programs. And we have an additional part-time librarian, which is helping us do more outreach. So we're able to get our librarians out of the building and into schools, senior centers, the YMCA, senior living facilities, involved with organizations like the Chamber of Commerce and the Rotary and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wish that I could say Charlotte was the same, but as I understand, our trend has been fewer and fewer full-time. And I myself am a part-time employee along with pretty much everybody in our branch.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking to decreases in staffing in some libraries, there was a Pew Research study this past April about headcounts in libraries. And the study said 76% of Americans say that libraries well serve the needs of their community, and 78% say they've been to a public library ever in their lives, so the approval rate is high. Yet, on the other hand, in the 12 months before the most recent Pew survey, again, that was in April, only 44% of Americans visited a local library or a bookmobile. So 3 years earlier, it was 53%. So these numbers seem to be decreasing, according to at least this one poll. But Pew is saying that the decline in library traffic, part of it is driven by technological change. So they're recommending that libraries rely more on their non-print services. So are you looking at ways to move away from your print collections and promote more of these engagement opportunities? Are there specific things that you're doing to help bring more people in? And are you concerned about this lack of traffic?
At Gates, I think this year we're going to be slightly over where we were as far as our overall door count is. But I know it's a broad trend in libraries in the area and across the country. And for your listeners at home who can't see me, I'm a relatively young man. I could conceivably be doing this for another 35 years. But I'm not just interested in the longevity of libraries for job security. We've made a concerted effort at Gates to kind of pivot away relying on our print collection to offering experiences in the library. So in 2011, when our new facility, I still think of it as the new facility on Elm Grove Road, opened, we had 330 library programs that year. We had 7,400 people come to a library program. So far this year, we've had 860 programs, and we've had just over 28,000 people come to a library program. I think by the end of the year, we'll have surpassed 30,000 people. So we're trying to re-engage with people, not just, you know, who like to read, but people who want to have enriching and, you know, activities for their families, seniors who are looking to stay connected and have their social and emotional needs met. So that's one way that you're pivoting away. And now it's not exactly related to digital materials, but I think it's an appropriate supplement to either print or digital.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anyone else want to jump in? Judy,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, we just started a new platform called Hoopla, which is available to City of Library cardholders. That is digital content, music, DVDs, audiobooks, comics, and it's become very popular. For myself, I won't be working in the library for another 35 years, but I do get a little nervous about the change in format and technology happening so quickly. How long will people be using DVDs or CDs? Mm-hmm. So it's something that's on our mind, but we're trying to move forward with technology and offer a digital format. And it seems to be something that's very popular, and people are still coming into the library, though.
Mm-hmm. One thing, too, that's interesting to think about is as we kind of have a larger percentage of our collection be comprised of digital materials, the way people interact and use those materials is changing. So, for instance, our downloadable books. We have ebooks that you can read and downloadable audiobooks that you can listen to. Downloadable audiobooks have just skyrocketed in popularity. Downloadable audio is a much bigger portion of our downloadable collection than your traditional book on CD, books on tape are for our physical collection. So I think that more people are getting hooked on podcasts and things of that nature. And then the next logical step when you've, you know, exhausted all of your supply of 99% invisible is to get an audio book that you can listen to.
Mm-hmm. Related to that, I have a question that might be silly and you may laugh, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I was looking for a particular ebook and it wasn't available at the time, so it was on hold. And the message I got was that it was on hold until someone else was done using it. If it's a digital resource, why is it on hold?
The publishers have certain rules for how many people can use a book, and a lot of the licensing is one book, one user. They try and keep it like it is for the print books. It's something that is a thorn in library sides. It has been since the kind of digital, you know, digital content revolution has happened. They limit circulations. We are only allowed to keep a book for either 26 checkouts or a year, and then the license expires and we have to buy it again. So, you know, and these books do not cost less than a print book. Sometimes they cost more just because of the licensing required for sharing. And it's, yeah, it's something we'd like to change, but it's their business model, and it's kind of very difficult to get them to see our side of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. Now I understand. Back to the phones. This is Judith in Rochester. Hi, Judith.
Hello. I am a mixed media artist, and from time to time, very seldom, I am offered a commission to do a particular work. And this ended up as a commission to build an animal, decided it would be a giraffe to be inside a child care setting over at RCN on South Avenue. And I didn't really know how to approach what did that giraffe look like, any aspect. And I went to the little known and I think unappreciated picture file in the art division in the downtown libraries. You can take out on your card pictures in an envelope that you can use, then you return them. And many of these I did take out and I copied, so I had my own resources. I was happy to say the giraffe turned out very well, and it is alive and well down on South Avenue indoors. And the picture file is something to be investigated. Students do this. They need references for picture, different references for different reasons. And it's fun to just explore what they have. So that's a really very little known resource of the library, I think. People are surprised that I could access that.
Thank you, Judith. And I know Judy wants to respond, so stay on the line.
Judy
has an answer. Judy and Judith, yes.
Okay. Hi, Judith. I just wanted to respond to that because I used to work in the art division when the picture file was there. It is no longer there, unfortunately. It went by the wayside when Google Images took over the internet. So a lot of our patrons were not coming in to use the picture file so much. So we did have to dismantle it. And a lot of the libraries did take a lot of the picture files. Yeah. I know that the Monroe branch took a lot of them. A lot of art teachers were able mm-hmm. to use them. But unfortunately, the picture file no longer exists at the library.
I'm sorry to hear that. And not everybody Googles. Not everybody
I know.
Has a computer. I live without
You're right.
one, and I'm delighted. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. And perhaps there might be a different interest. But the computer doesn't do it for everybody.
Thanks, Judah. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Back to the emails. A lot of positive comments coming in about childhood memories in libraries. This is from Michael in Rochester. He said, one of my happiest childhood memories was being old enough to go to the library with my mother and get a library card and being able to take out books and records. I think that free public libraries and universal public education are two of the best ideas that our country ever had. When will I be able to take out videos and watch them through Netflix on my TV and not just on my computer? Judy.
Okay. like I said, we do offer Hoopla to city residents. And if you download Hoopla to your device, you can stream it to your TV using some device like a Chromecast. So it is available. You can do it with the library card, and it's free.
Okay, great. Thank you, Judy. Glenda would like to remind us that not all girls read girls' books, quote-unquote girls' books, and not all boys read, quote-unquote, boys' books. So just something that we can all think about. And then sort of related to that, Valerie writes in. She says, I'm a fan of the library. I do notice that more and more mid-grade books are finally including children with physical disabilities. Most recently, The Wolf's Boy and The War That Saved My Life. But there is little available in picture books. Young children with physical differences do need to find themselves in picture books. What would you look for that would make you eager to buy these needed books? Kim?
A couple titles come to mind. They're not in the picture book category. The biography of Cece Bell is called El Defo, and that one has been very well received. It's not for young children, but I think it addresses an aspect of that category. One of my favorite books in recent years is called Wonder, and it was written by R.J. Palacio, and it's the story of Augie, who is born craniofacial deformity, and now in fifth grade, he's going to start going to school. He's been homeschooled because of so many medical issues, and it's just a tremendously touching book, and it tells about his year going to school and the kids he interacts with, and the struggles and the challenges and the triumphs. It's a really, really great book. And if anybody has read that book, by the way, there's now a companion piece called Augie and Me. So there's three more stories that go along with.
Can you repeat the titles and authors again, just in case
Sure.
Valerie or others are writing them down?
Wonder by R.J. Palacio, and the companion book, Augie and Me. Then El Defo, D-E-A-F-O, by C.C. Bell.
Great. So that brings up a question about when you're making choices regarding acquisitions. Are you keeping in mind diversity, physical differences, and all those types of things? Our community is made up of so many different people. When you're buying books, how do you address meeting everyone's needs and everyone's, you know, making everyone see themselves in a book in some way?
I think one of the best ways that we're able to do that at Gates, and I know other libraries employ this tactic as well, is to get out and get involved in community groups. You know, we have people at our staff who do satellite programs at the YMCA. We partner with the school district, which has been a tremendous partner for us. And when you are getting outside of the library and interacting with people who may not ordinarily come into the library, you can actually see get a broader sense of what the diversity is, for the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to jump in there? Judy, Sally?
Just being in the city, we have, you know, such a wide variety of people that come into the library, and I think as a librarian, me being on the reference desk and helping people and just getting an idea of what they like is my best way of knowing and staying on the pulse of what people want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, libraries usually reflect their community. I mean, you know, we always say that about our branches in the city. We say it's a branch thing, because we have 10 branches plus the central library, and all of them represent a different community. So all of them have, you know, different books to represent that community.
Mm-hmm. The other angle, too, is if you aren't seeing, like the person who wrote in about books for children with disabilities, if you're not seeing what you're looking for, let us know, because we always make an effort to be responsive to the concerns of the people in our community.
Great. Do you think promotion is a problem among libraries? And I don't mean PR, like we're having this event tomorrow. Just what libraries stand for and what they believe in and the services they provide. Do you think there should be more of an effort to talk yourselves up more?
Yes. Yes, actually. Just before this, I came from a meeting where we were discussing a marketing plan for the Rochester Public Library. And in both the strategic plans for the Rochester Public Library and the Monroe County Library System, marketing was kind of a top priority for the year. It was one of the things we needed to do most. I think librarians have not done a good job tooting their own horns about, you know, the value they bring to the community, the services they provide. We have a lot of things. We're a very diverse organization. We do a lot of different things. So it's been hard to find ways to get the word out there. And it's something that a lot of libraries across the country are beginning to realize and take a lot more seriously.
One thing I'd like to add, too, is, we've spoken a little bit about the challenges that digital media represent to the notion of what a library is. And, you know, sometimes as Judy's mentioned, it can give you a little bit of anxiety, what our library is going to look like in the future. But one of the other side of that coin is social media and constant contact, things like that have really helped us get out there in a way that we would not have been able to afford to get out there before. We have an email newsletter that we send out twice a month. It goes to, you know, roughly 8,000 people. We would have never been able to mail 8,000 mailers out to people in the Gates community before. And social media, we can really showcase what we're doing in a much more tangible way. You can see the crafts people are making. You can see the excitement on the faces of the children. It's really been the other side to that coin, so to speak. It's been a huge benefit to the libraries.
Let's talk about spaces for a minute. I know that there are some libraries throughout the country and throughout the world who see value in not necessarily getting rid of their physical collections, but relying less on them, maybe putting them down in storage, and creating spaces that serve as technology sandboxes. Maybe the insides of their libraries look sort of like Google or Facebook, their headquarters. As public libraries, what are your thoughts on those decisions?
I don't know.
I was just going to say, in the children's room, we're tremendously lucky to have a lot of space where we're setting aside opportunities for them to build with Lincoln logs or to do a puppet show through the window of the castle. The dollhouse, the puzzles, lots of crafting space and opportunities to engage not just with books, but mm-hmm. to be there and to sit with their mom or dad, their caregiver, and they have a wonderful time at the library.
Mm-hmm. It's library as community space is the new kind of buzzword. And, at the Central Library, we're doing a project we call Collections to Community. And we're revamping the Rundle Building, the 80-year-old original library building, putting some of the collections in storage. They're still around. They're still accessible, but we're putting them in storage. But we're making another performance space for programming. We've opened up the wall next to the river, and we're going to put tables there so people can have study area, sit and talk or read with the beautiful view of the river. The collections will still be there. There are just less of them right there on the floor to browse, but we find that people, as our circulation, and all libraries have been seeing this circulation dropping, but people still coming in the door. So how are they using the library? Well, they're coming for a quiet place. They're coming for an office space, in some cases for small business. They're using our Wi-Fi. They are still using the collections, but maybe they're not checking them out. So Collections to Community is just moving the library use into a different space, and that seems to be how people want the library, is, as a community space.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've done at Gates that I think speaks to this pretty successfully is we have what we call an early learning center in our children's room, and that's targeted specifically toward preschoolers and their parents. Now in Gates, we're one of the few school districts that doesn't have universal pre-K. It's a lottery-based system, so roughly 60 to 70 kids get turned away from preschool, and not all of those kids come from families that can afford private accommodations. So with that specific need in mind, we created this early learning center that is built with the concepts of an educational initiative called Every Child Ready to Read in mind. So that we have in that area toys that the children can play with, but each of the toys corresponds with a specific educational concept that children will have to have some familiarity with in order to be ready for kindergarten. It also works for the parents too, because it gets parents, in many cases, it's their first child, gets them comfortable with being their child's first educator. Because that's something that we try to reinforce with our story times and our collection, is that parents really are the first and most important educator that a child will have. So that's one way that we've transformed space that was previously allocated for things other than community use into something that meets a community need.
Mm-hmm. Kelly from Penfield wanted to jump in. She says, for the person looking for access to more electronic books, the New York City Public Library offers a free library card, including OverDrive access to ebooks, to residents of New York State. So everyone's nodding. Great. Thank you, Kelly, for that tip. We're down to our last few minutes, and I just want to go around the table and ask each of you what your vision is for your library for the next 10 years. So what do you think will be the biggest change in your building or regarding services? What to you is the most significant change that might happen? We can start with Greg. I'll put you on the spot.
We have some plans in place to coordinate better with the school district to provide supplementary education to children. We have an after-school program that we started where children are bused from two elementary schools now to our library for educational programs. Over the next 10 years, I anticipate we're going to see more programming, more people coming to the library for classes and symposiums. We have a project that we're working on with the school district next year to help actually offer preschool classes within the library's facility as a part of the school district. So just another expansion of the way that the library's been getting involved with community education.
Great. Thank you.
And, of course, we'll be opening the new art wing in the Art and Literature Building in Rundle. And then the next phase will be to open the new Teen Central on the second floor, which will be a beautiful space for the teens with a place where they can do film and recording and graphics, you know, a lot of digital digital things they can get their hands on and work with. And then once that's complete, our next phase is the Tech Center.
Great, great.
And improvements at the branches follow after Central is done.
So what are you looking to see, Kim, in your library?
It was wonderful having conversations with our management over at the staff meeting, and we have lots of ideas, but
okay.
Each branch has their own vision, yeah.
Okay, great. I want to thank you all for coming in today and being part of this conversation. We always have great feedback about library-related shows. I'd like to thank Judy Shuey, Sally Snow, Greg Benoit, and Kim Whittemore, all librarians in our community. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for listening to member-supported Public Radio. We'll see you tomorrow on Connections.